This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Thank you for listening to Radioactive Radio. On today's show, we're covering Ferguson and police brutality of all types. We have two organizations here with us today. We have One Struggle, and we have the I.W. Wells Coalition, activists from both groups. One Struggle, we have Kristen Chow.
Hello.
Luz Ortiz.
Hi, everyone.
And Pam Haywood.
Hello.
And then from the I.W. Wells Coalition, we have Keith Brownell.
Hey, how's everybody?
All right. So I think we're going to start off the show. Excuse me. I think we're going to start off the show with talking a little bit about One Struggle. Would one of you guys like to just tell us a little bit about the group, kind of a mission statement, sort of, to speak?
Well, One Struggle KC is a coalition of activists or community members who came together to sort of harness the energy of Ferguson to sort of connect the struggles of several communities. And so that's basically what we've been focused on.
Okay. And Keith, you want to kind of tell us a little bit about the I.W. Wells Coalition?
Yeah, it's the I.W. Wells Coalition Against Police Brutality and Discrimination. And that's essentially what we work to try to fight against. Right now we're involved in some projects where we have a prisoner's letter writing campaign where we try to correspond with prisoners and find out about the things that's going on inside the institutions, because you have many abuses taking place there as well. But we're 100% committed to this situation involving Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Eric Gardner, and everybody else who has been victimized by police brutality and excessive use of force, deadly force.
All right. And Keith talked a little bit about some of the stuff they've been working on. Do you guys want to talk about a few of projects that you've done, some of the actions that you've done recently?
Well, excuse me. Right after the grand jury announcement, One Struggle held a community forum where upwards of 200 people came out and basically just voiced their opinion and vented and processed what had happened in Ferguson and the Mike Brown situation. And after that, actually Ida B. Wells held a protest nearby, and we joined with them on a march down through the plaza and through Westport, again, voicing our frustrations with the decision and with the police brutality and the over-policing of, communities of color and, all the connected issues there concerning Michael Brown situation.
Mm-hmm. And, from talking with you guys earlier, before the show started, I know that several of you have actually spent time and protested or was down at Ferguson itself. Do you want to talk about kind of what you guys have seen there? I mean, do you feel like it's being portrayed accurately in the mainstream media?
Well, I went down to Ferguson twice. I've been down twice, and I went down shortly after Mike Brown was killed. And that first weekend was really emotional. And it was it wasn't the way it was being portrayed in the media. When it first happened, you saw people people were being portrayed as violent, as looting. And when I got down there, it was a very emotional experience. It felt very communal. People were serving food, and people would just drive by that Quick Trip and drop off water for the protesters, and people were taking care of each other, and it just felt very empowering. But it was on the other end of that, it was you could feel the pain as well, that this was a community in pain, and just a community that had been pushed to the brink. And this was just what you saw was the outpouring of, you know, anger and you know, a range of emotion. And it wasn't what I saw on TV, which, you know, some of the images you saw were served the purpose of demonizing that community, and that's just not what I
right.
What
lots of looting photos and
yeah.
you know, video of things, storefronts on fire, and you know, things like that.
Yeah, and the second time I went down, again, it was the same feelings. A very resilient community, and a community that is ready to for change. So I don't know if Pan was down there much recently, much more recently.
Yeah, I went down there immediately, like pretty much an hour, within an hour after the grand jury was announced. We were in Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And overall, I completely agree with Kristen. I will add that one of the things that's not being portrayed in the media is how violent the police were being, and how oftentimes it was the police escalating situations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about you, Keith? I know you've been down there.
Yeah, I just returned from Ferguson this weekend, and I had a similar experience with the people down there. There's still quite a bit of grief. I mean, you have people gathered around the Michael Brown Memorial, and you know, it's very serene. You know, you can see the grief and the hurt in a lot of people's faces. People that didn't even probably know Michael Brown, and they're very moved over this situation. You know, I also like to add that I have posted a video on my Facebook page, which is under the name of Keith Brown Hill. We have some video surveillance of some of the National Guards or paramilitary people actually starting the fires. I went down there over the weekend, and I surveyed the areas where the damage was done. If you look at these buildings, there are photos on my Facebook page. If you look at the photos, you can tell that these fires were started by professional arsonists. You know, they knew exactly where to burn the buildings, and they strategically selected buildings that they knew had a high content of flammable liquids in it, like AutoZone, Advanced Auto, a beauty shop. All of these places are places that have a high quantity of flammable liquids. You know, they actually have these. We don't know who they are. We don't know if they're National Guard. We don't know if they're police. We don't know if they're Highway Patrol, but they had on paramilitary attire. And okay. They were seen setting one of the places on fire that burned. The buildings have been burned all the way down to the aluminum structure, okay. You know, which was not easy to do. Mm-hmm. I have photos on there of showing inside the building. It was total destruction. You know, there was probably maybe one building. It was a restaurant that, you know, it was somebody had tried to set it on fire from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just partially damaged.
Okay. All right. So have you guys, like, can you tell a difference in Ferguson from, like, before the verdict and after the verdict? I mean, is there a change in the mood or, like, how people are dealing?
Like I said before the show, I don't want to speak too much on, like, how they're feeling, because I don't know, like, personally. But I will say that the ambiance after the verdict, I felt, was a bit more, like, a bit angrier, I would say. A good deal more anger and even more distrust of the system, because it failed them again. And I could feel it, like, mm-hmm.
I guess kind of getting back to the protests and the activism. I mean, what are some things that you guys want to see done? Like, what do you want to see come out of this? I mean, do you believe that putting, like, body cameras on the police, do you think that's going to change things? Is this something that you see happening, or?
Well, I think that's a million-dollar question, really. But I think that the police could definitely be held more accountable for the brutal killings in black and brown communities. I think also there's not enough transparency on whenever a case like this happened. And I think it's kind of also ridiculous that Darren Wilson wasn't even actually trialed. You know, he wasn't even, you know, the indictment wasn't,
you know. It was just a hearing to see if it should
exactly,
go to,
yes.
Court,
so I guess there's work trial. to be done on that.
Do you think that there's something wrong with our grand jury system?
I think it's something wrong with the system overall. I think that there was misconduct, clearly, with the Ferguson jury, grand jury. But I just think that, you know, it was used by the prosecutor to, you know, shield himself politically and sort of shirk the responsibility of trying somebody, you know, who had killed, you know, Michael Brown. But going back to body cams and to tie this into Eric Garner, Eric Garner was killed on camera. There's video footage of it. So you have to ask yourself whether body cams will make a difference, or whether there's something deeper that needs to be changed, whether it be training or the mentality among, you know, police or police departments. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that policeman wasn't indicted either. And it's stated, it's fact, and right there in the video, he was using an illegal chokehold that no cop is supposed to use on a person at all.
Right.
I just recently learned today, and I haven't had a chance to verify it yet, but information was passed to me that the person that shot the video of the murder of Eric Garner, he's been indicted. Now,
he's been indicted of what?
I don't have a clue. I guess interfering with the duties of the police officers, I'm assuming.
It was an unrelated weapons charge.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, all I know is that I was told that he was indicted. But the point that I would like to make, I'm saying it's we keep going back and everybody's making a big deal out of the things that are taking place in Ferguson that are being laid, and the blame is being laid at the feet of the people who are protesting. You know, and, you know, they are being characterized as being violent and criminal, but nobody is characterizing the police as being violent and criminal. You know, these people that's making these accusations, and they're more violent and indulging in more criminal behavior than anyone. You know, and I don't know how you expect for people to continue to have faith in the government when the government and the judicial system, when they are continuously showing you that they are going to defy the law or do whatever they feel like needs to be done to protect their criminal conduct. Mm-hmm. You know, and sanction the behavior of people who go out and commit these type of crimes. I talked to one of the legislators last week during my visit to St. Louis, and I had suggested to him that it might possibly clear up some of the controversy if somebody could prevail on Darren Wilson to take a polygraph test, because we don't have anybody's word about what took place except his. You know, and they right. You know, you have witnesses saying one thing, he's saying something else. And if you know, he was to take a polygraph test, even though it's not admissible in court, that would clear up a lot of questions.
So part of what you're talking about is, and I don't know too much about this, I don't have a legal background, mm-hmm. but like in this grand jury, I hear that it's very favorable in Missouri to the police. Like Darren Wilson got to basically like have his say during the process and was not cross-examined or anything like that. He just sort of – he got his say, but nobody else got to have their say on behalf of Mike Brown.
Well, generally, from what I've understood in talking to people who are either lawyers or, you know, they practice law, grand juries are actually very fair – tend to fall in favor of the prosecution, of the prosecutor, and that it's actually rare that a person who is being brought up on charges would testify, and that exculpatory evidence would even be introduced into a grand jury. And here in Ferguson, we had both of those things happen. We had, you know, exculpatory evidence introduced, as well as Darren Wilson testifying on his own behalf. And, you know, it's rare and it almost never happens, where somebody has been accused of, say, murder or robbery, and they come and testify and say, no, I didn't do it. That's something that just rarely happens.
Right. I did hear a figure that, I don't remember which year, if it was 2012 or 2013, that there was over 130 or over 100,000 grand juries indictment hearings in that year, and there was only 11 that did not get the indictment. And here we're talking about, and I mean, I don't know what the numbers are for this year, but we just had two real close to each other, and all, you know, the same type of topic that did not go to indictment.
Right, right.
Well, historically, the state has never taken action against police officers who commit these type of crimes that people like Darren Wilson and some of the other people have been accused of, especially when they involve racial matters. And that's the very reason why we have the federal civil rights, criminal civil rights statute, because it was almost impossible for the state to get convictions in these type of cases. You know, now, I'm still trying to figure out why a lot of these people are not seem to be escaping indictments by the federal government. You know, when we've had presidents who have always managed to get these people indicted in certain situations before, now all of a sudden it's almost next to impossible.
Well, I think the federal, like, there's going to be a federal review of Darren Wilson, but that's a whole nother thing. Isn't that more of a civil liberties? Well, anyway, go ahead.
Well, it would fall under the civil rights statute that you are talking about, but even then, the bar is very high to prove that, you know, Michael Brown's civil rights were violated.
Okay.
But going back to one struggles, you know, one of the basis of its organization is that it's the system that's wrong, that's flawed, and it doesn't only affect, you know, the black community, it affects many communities, and it's a common enemy we're talking about here, and that's why we have, as part of our organization, a Spanish-speaking delegation that has been protesting the 43 missing students in Ayotzinapa. And
let's have Luz Ortiz talk about, I can't say that word,
Ayotzinapa.
A very sad case of Ayotzinapa. Well, we're, as One Struggle, KC, we've realized that we really needed to kind of activate Kansas City to show up for cases like this, not only Mike Brown and Eric Garner and Tamir Rice, but also what's going on in Mexico and around the globe. So Kansas City has been beautiful at showing up at two events we've had so far. We had a protest, and we also had a vigil, which was very kind of touching. You know, we all felt very deeply for our brothers that are disappeared. We do believe that it is all connected. Even our Spanish delegation, we realize that it's the system that is flawed. It's the war on drugs, the mass incarceration, all of these things that, NAFTA, things like that that affect our communities, across the borders.
Okay. So when you're talking about that, you're getting into, like, NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. So you're kind of talking about the, like, financial struggles, like it's a capitalistic, I'm not sure how to pronounce. Tell us a little bit more about, this was a drug cartel, right? Or do we not know, like, how these people disappeared?
Yes, we do know. The people that disappeared, the students, was the police of the city, which, you know, the police in Mexico is pretty much equivalent to the narco, you know, the narcs. You know, the narcs is pretty much equivalent to the government. You know, the government is pretty much equivalent to transnationals, you know, corporate greed. So I think that's where we connect it all.
Right. These people were speaking out about the what was going on in the area with the drug cartels. And then that is such a big part of the economy there?
Actually, the students were going to a different municipality to get funds to for their school. They had they were education students. They were going to school to be teachers and to be clear, in rural areas. However, they were kind of radicalized. They wanted to bring attention to the 1968 mass killings in Mexico of other students. And the mayor's wife, which was having a political event that day, pretty much sent the order to the police to take care of them in a very violent manner. So we know who did it. Mm-hmm. It was the state. It was a Mexican state.
Sorry, I'm not as up on that topic as the other ones that we've talked about tonight. So it's great that you're here to talk about that and
when you talk about these type of situations, you don't get a lot of people's attention because they view this as something that's in a far away land. It's and the first thing they tell you, well, this is America, it can't happen here. But we are swiftly moving towards this very same direction. There is another story going around that the people who testified in the Michael Brown case on behalf of Michael Brown were threatened by police and various other officials telling them they better keep their mouth shut. Well, last week it's been reported that one of the key witnesses was found dead, shot to death in his car, and they attempted to set the car on fire, and he was found a few feet away from the Michael Brown Memorial. This story is being suppressed. It's nowhere you can't find it anywhere on mainstream media. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to look for it on alternative media sources. But I mean, I think the whole Ferguson Police Department, the prosecutor's office, and everybody, I think all of them should be indicted. And I think they should be indicted by the people. I think we need to stop worrying about trying to let things run through a criminal justice process that's criminal in the way it handles things. You know, they need to be indicted by the people, and we need to go down there to the courthouse and drag them out and hold a trial of our own and stop trying to do things their way. Because if you continue to let the enemy dictate your method of struggle, then he's going to define it for you in a way where you won't be effective.
Okay. So I'm going to take it that you guys are working on the same problem, but I'm going to say that you probably are taking two different avenues to fix it. You sound like you're a little bit more willing to work outside of the system. And are you guys more non-violent, would I say? I don't know.
I've had the misfortune of being privy to a lot of things, corruption in the system that probably maybe a lot of people haven't seen until now. You know, I have a background in corrections. You know, I served 36 years out of my life incarcerated in the Missouri Department of Corrections. I see the same tactics out here being applied and used against people out here in society that they used against many of the people in prison. You know, the first thing they try to do is they try to rob you of all your credibility. And they tell you, you know, when you file legitimate complaints or, you know, you get somebody interested in your case, and they tell you, well, you can't listen to them. They're a bunch of murderers. They're rapists. They're robbers. They're criminals and things. And they try to dehumanize you. They make you into this very type of demon that Darren Wilson described as Michael Brown. You know, he kept making these references to his, he was acting like he was possessed. He was a demon or something. And they have to reduce you in the minds of the public to a subhuman level for people to be able to say, okay, well, what if they have to deal with people like that, then we just have to let them deal with them however it do whatever it takes, you know, to keep, because we don't want them out here in society. We don't want them out here threatening people and things of that nature. So once they're able to do this, then they have a license to do these type of things to you. I have been witnessing this nearly all of my life and during my period of incarceration. So this is nothing new to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know how difficult it's going to be to change people who are in this mindset. You know, this is a country that has always needed a reason to dehumanize other people because so it could oppress them. You know, they have to have somebody that they can hold up in front of everybody else in society and say, well, your life might not be everything you think it is, but at least you're not like them. You know, don't let your life deteriorate to the point where you wind up in this type of situation here.
And a divide and conquer?
Yes, that's exactly what it is, a divide and conquer.
And that's exactly what we're trying to do, you know, unite the struggles between, you know, it is a dehumanization of black and brown people. So that's why we're coming together and, you know, doing our best effort to bring this topic that, you know, our lives do matter, you know, black lives do matter and, you know, brown lives do matter as well.
All right. And that reminds me of one of the events that you guys have coming up. We're kind of getting close to the end of the show. So let's talk about some of the protests and actions that you have coming up soon.
Tomorrow we have a direct action training for people who want to get involved in protesting and demonstrating against some of the issues that were that have been brought to light. And that's at 6 p.m. at St. Andrew Church.
It's at 6:30 at St. Andrew United Methodist Church on 4601 Benton Boulevard. That's tomorrow.
And then on the 19th, we have the Community Healing Project Session 2 at 6 p.m. That's on a Friday, December 19th at 21 East 12th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, at the Project Space Gallery. That's in conjunction with Charlotte Street.
We also want to invite people to the Street Medic Workshop on Saturday, the December 13th at 4 p.m. It's not really hosted by One Struggle, but I think it's very important moving on to the next actions, and that's at the Like Me Lighthouse on 3909 Main Street. And then the last event I want to share with you is on December 20th, which is our call to action, and that's going to be at 3:30, and we're meeting at Truman Road in Paseo.
Okay.
That's the Parade Park, by the way, at the corner of Paseo and Truman.
Okay. And for people who want to find out a little bit more about your organization, how can they contact you, like websites, Facebook?
Our Facebook page is the most active, and it's One Struggle KC, and that's spelled out, One Struggle KC. And we're also on Twitter at the number one Struggle KC, and we also have a Facebook page, a web page that you can Google us. So yeah, if you just Google One Struggle KC, you'll find us.
Okay, and then Ida B. Wells Coalition. When do you guys meet to do your prison letter writing?
We meet every Sunday afternoon from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Like Me Lighthouse at 39th and Main. This is a few doors down from the radio station here at KKFI. And we encourage everybody to stop by and participate in this letter writing program or other activities that we sponsor.
Okay. Do you have any other events coming up?
Yeah, but we're not at liberty to say it this time.
Okay. And if they want to find out more about your organization, do you have a website, a Facebook page that they can look up?
Yes, they can go to the Ida B. Wells website. It's on Facebook.
All right. Sounds good. I want to thank you all for coming in and taking the time to talk to all of us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, and you guys have been listening to Radioactive Magazine on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City's community radio.